I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But they love eating people. They love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. Yep, it was the Santa Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably dead. Toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants.
That's over.
I've seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Hurry. Hit the mic. Your mic's too low. Hey, welcome back to Crypto Corn Podcast. I am the great and powerful Mystery.
And I'm J-Clone 143.
143.
Yep.
I guess I didn't mention it on Monday's episode. I was in the ER this past weekend.
Oh, that's right.
Dying of lung.
Well, at least it wasn't lung worms.
No, I mean, it did feel like that a little bit.
Yeah. At least it wasn't, though, you know. Mm-hmm. Count your blessings.
Bronchitis. Couldn't breathe.
And you're better now.
Yeah. I'm also on steroids and antibiotics.
Ooh, what about...
If I could have found Mullen, I would have used that instead.
Oh, I think I know where some is.
Yeah, I would have tried it. I would have smoked Mullen.
Is that what you do?
I think so, but don't take my word for that. I
really have no idea.
I think you, like...
You dry the leaves and you can smoke them?
I think, but I'm not sure.
I know Mullen's good for your respiratory system.
Yes,
I know
it breaks. It's famous for breaking up mucus.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know exactly how you apply it or use it or.
I have no idea.
Any listeners out there? Ambrosia.
Ambrosia.
If you know how to, please inform us.
Or Brandon, his aunt.
Or Brandon's aunt. Yes.
She's an apothecary.
Or I wonder if your neighbor. Probably.
She would. Let me go. Let me yell at the window.
Yeah.
Go Linda. Really quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's cars parked right there.
I don't know what she'd sound like, but
she just sounds like a woman.
Ballin? Yeah. I don't know. Well, roll it into a ball and you just chew on it.
Probably. So this is a group. I found this little collection of stories. There's not a lot of great detail into any of them, but they just have some weird creatures in them. And a weird through line of creatures.
What are you referring to?
This for today's episode.
Oh, okay.
And there's a little hodgepodge of this and that. There's not a lot of information on any of these.
Okay, so we just got some one-off guys.
Yeah, but they're like a little collection of them.
So they're fun.
So there are some scattered stories from Japanese troops surveying the smoky battlefields and telling of seeing what appeared to be very large octopus-like beings picking through the corpses.
Oh, in Japan?
Yeah.
Wait.
World War II.
Octopus. Like, oh, so this is on land, though?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. We're starting with a fun one.
So, yeah, these guys are going back after a battlefield looking, and then there's these octopoid-like creatures that are picking through the corpses of people.
That may be a first for Crypto of the Corn.
What?
Octopoid? I don't think
we've said the word octopoid.
No way. I said insectoid.
Yes.
I don't remember octopoid, though, yet. So there you go. Chalk it up.
Octopoid. But yeah, just a very large octopus-like creature picking through the corpses.
Hmm.
The creature was said to be around 4 feet in height, but rather than slither about like one would expect a normal octopus to do, it was said to walk upright on their tentacles with their heads held high above the ground. So a perfectly like a perfect structured octopus.
Does that picture anything in your head?
Yes.
What's that?
I'm not going to tell you yet.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Why does it picture anything in your head?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The Fresno Nightcrawler?
Yeah, they come up and the Carmel.
Well, it was Mount Carmel, Ohio Mount Carmel Monster. Same.
Yeah.
Same thing, different flavor.
They come up later.
Okay, okay, fair
enough. But no, yeah, the bipedal octopoid.
Yeah, interesting. Oh, well, okay, go on. This is cool.
Yeah. So, you know, stand it up. One of the beasts, so there was apparently more than one. One of the beasts was startled or alerted. It would appear to stretch its tentacles up and hold its head higher, like a camera mount on a tripod.
Mm-hmm.
So this, it would stand up and get like 6-7 foot tall, like it was trying to stretch itself and make itself look as big as possible.
Almost like a chicken when he's on lookout.
And yeah, all like kinds of animals will do that, where they're like, when they get caught and they're like, they're big. So a lot of animals are like, their hair will stand up on end just to look bulkier.
Oh yeah. Like when you frighten a cat.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Making all the more sinister is that the soldiers who saw these creatures claim that they were actually coming to feed upon the corpses of their fallen brethren. It's hard to know what makes of these reports, and one wonders if it was just spooky, forgotten wartime legends from the battlefield. So that's pretty much it for the first one.
That's it?
That surveyors wouldn't, like, after a complete decimation, they were just going back through to survey and see what was left of the battlefield.
Right, anybody, yeah.
And these creatures would sometimes be seen in large groups feeding upon the corpses on people. Now, this is the rake in European folklore. The thing that would go through corpses in battlefields was talked about, this gaunt skeletal figure that would follow human cavalcades around and feast upon the aftermath.
Right.
They were not very powerful creatures themselves. If they were hunting, they pretty much only ever target children.
Mm-hmm.
And that was rare. But they were they were like vultures.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But during war times, they would said that sometimes people would see like hundreds of them gathered in forest in Europe.
Like waiting.
And we're talking like the 13th, 14th century.
When they still do volleys back and forth.
So they would see them waiting in the woodlines. And you knew a lot of people were going to die that day with how many of them showed up.
A little foreshadowing, so to speak.
Isn't that nice?
Oh, yeah. It's not the one thing I'd want to see on the battlefield.
So these octopuses are kind of similar to that. And they're roughly octopus shaped. That was just the best animal they could describe them to.
Closest to.
But yeah, they were barely like touching their tentacles to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So they were just on the very tips of their tentacles and when they were standing all the way upright.
So, I mean, I don't know. I got a couple ideas for this, what it could be.
I think.
Besides just, you know, the Fresno Nightcrawler, like explain it with a unexplainable thing.
I think my option will surprise you.
Will it be? No, because I already know.
I think everybody can figure it out where this is going, because they get the title.
I already figure out what I think you're going to say, but I'm actually thinking something maybe similar, but also the quite opposite. What if these are things that come, that live underground?
Yeah.
And they kind of scavenge on, like roadkill.
So...
And they're just big, and maybe there's a population nearby, and they just come up out of the ground because there's all this food.
Well, I mean, the war could be attracting them.
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
Smelling,
rotting carrion meat, but human.
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of humans.
So pull these things to the surface. And
I mean, World War II was...
devastating.
Especially on the... especially on all fronts, but you know, some of these Japanese islands...
I can't imagine.
...were just hundreds of corpses.
I can't imagine. War is a horrible, horrible, horrible thing for the world.
That it never matters what you just, yeah. There's a Doctor Who quote. You never know whose children are going to burn after you fire that first shot.
Nope. Don't know.
So, spooky figures. Then we have what's come to be known as the Octosquatch.
Ooh, we've met him before.
It's not the same Octosquatch.
From the Ohio River?
It's not the Ohio River Octoman.
Okay, so another variation.
In the summer of 1961, a 29-year-old truck driver named Alquez Santanez was driving along the picturesque mountain road of the Basque Mountains in Spain around 11 p.m., along with an unnamed companion, on their way to the town of Pito Bay Berzal. As they rounded a bend, their headlights hit a bizarre and rather monstrous being standing in front of them in the embankment nearby, which prompted the pair to stop the vehicle. When they peered through the murk ahead of them, they claimed to saw what the best way they could describe was a hairy, large, octopus-like creature.
Okay.
Which stood around 4 feet tall with glowing eyes and, quote-unquote, he said, tentacle-like arms. They were not true tentacles on an octopus. They were tentacle-like.
Mm-hmm. So that can mean anything.
Yeah, they were long, spindly, but they were strong
arms,
dexterous. The witness and the thing apparently sat there, completely frozen, immobile for several minutes, both parties just as startled and scared of each other. He was very adamant that the thing was just as scared as they were. Like,
that's what he thinks, but really it's peering into his soul and downloading his consciousness.
It's just like, I'm distracting you from my brother and run down the hill and get you.
Right, yeah.
So he has several minutes as they started to scare each other before he snapped out of it and he slammed on the accelerator, which caused the weird apparition to scurry backwards away from the threat of the car coming at him. Mm. After which he backed up and tried again, apparently to, you know, intent on running the thing over.
That's, I mean, honestly.
So he tried to gun it and hit it. And then it ran, and then he turned around and tried to run it back over.
The hypnosis isn't working.
I'm just saying that there's definitely a monster in this story, and one of them is not trying to run over the other.
What if his car's possessed like in Carrie, and the car did it?
Yeah.
It wasn't him.
Interesting, though, the otherworldly intruder refused to take off into the night. Instead, always just managing to avoid being ran over, as if it were a game or it had something to protect there. Hmm. Finally, the two men, neither who were willing to step out of the vehicle to investigate this odd entity, they finally drove off and left the being behind, never to be seen again. Hmm.
It does, physically, I mean, it's not the most descriptive story, but...
There is a sketch of it.
Oh, really?
He did draw a sketch of it.
Wow, okay.
But it's not very big. He's max at 4 feet tall, and it was running on its tentacles. But it just was like, it would not leave the area.
And this is in Spain.
Like glowing eyes. But I think that was more vehicle, like the headlight reflecting, than like the actual glow. Because he never really gave a color.
So I shine.
Yeah, in my opinion, that's what I would go with. And it almost looks like if Cousin It had tentacles.
Yeah, that's what it looked like, yeah.
But it just kept running around in circles, and it would not leave the roadside, like either side of the road. Hmm. So reading it, you know, there's hundreds of ideas crossing your head. Are there more of them nearby and it's just trying to protect them?
Yeah.
Like, birds, we talk about killdeer, the bird, if they have their babies nearby, they'll act like they're hurt or they'll try to lead things away.
Scurry it, yeah. Too, I wonder if, like with the last one, what were you saying? You said, dang, I had a thought there and it's fleeting now. With these, the hairy octopus-like thing, it reminded me of, I'm totally drawing a blank here. That's
I'm glad we had this talk.
I don't know what just happened to me.
Hairy octopus.
It's like, oh, I was going to say, like, him driving the car at the thing, too. If it was, like, kind of trying to put him in a trance-like state, I thought of, like, Daryl Sims. Mm. Where, you know, talking about how gray aliens, they more or less put you in a trance
with their
state.
Eyes, right?
Yeah, with their eyes or just whatever they're feeling to kind of hold you in a state of suspense so then they can capture you or do whatever they need to do with you. I mean, some of these creatures are just so weird and odd that it just feels like they may not be a natural thing to this world. And maybe that's one of the things they try to do is get into your head and I guess capture you in ways like that, like gray aliens, similar to gray aliens abducting you.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know. And then when he just floored that, it's like, wow, like the thing when it... Whoop.
Running back and forth on the road.
Like Zoidberg. Like what Daryl said
when... It actually kind of look like Zoidberg.
Huh?
The head of Zoidberg.
It kind of does, yeah.
If Zoidberg was hairy.
Right, yeah, exactly. Because Daryl said when he had his experience as a kid, he kind of was in that trance state, but he snapped out of it and was able to touch the alien or grab it. And he even said he heard them speak.
Remember, he hit it.
Yeah.
Knocked the eye cap off.
That's right, yeah. I think he grabbed the eye cap, pulled it off.
I thought he punched it.
I think...
Because it made me laugh, because I think he punched it.
Either way,
it's
gone.
Because I just imagine this little kid just nailing one of these things, and they're not expecting it.
And he said he heard one of them say, it's awake, like looking at, referring to Daryl. I don't know. I mean, however you believe in that stuff, but it's just an odd phenomenon that's kind of, I feel like, overlapping behavior. So wherever, they could be from the same origin place.
See, you took it with more nefarious than I did for this thing. It's all opinion, you know, at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get anything nefarious from the story, but it's also very short with very limited details.
Right, yeah.
To me, it really just seemed like a surprised animal or a thing, you know, it's a surprise entity. And then he was trying to run it over, so it was just, you know, just dodging a car.
Right, yeah.
But maybe it is nefarious. Maybe it is.
You never know.
And it could be like Mothman, too, where...
Might not be nefarious, but...
But they end up from somewhere else. They're not from here, and they're just lost and hanging out.
Mm-hmm. Or even Flatwoods Monster is another example. It's
We're actually never...
Hurt nobody.
Did anything on purpose.
Yeah.
But a lot of people got sick from being near Braxy.
And it was very frightening.
Mm-hmm. You know, terrifying to look at.
Yeah.
But we always say she, but she never did anything.
Right.
But she scraped the car one time, but her body is just, was hard.
Right, exactly, yeah.
More recent years, in December of 2014, there was a very odd report taken by the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, concerning an outlandish bipedal creature that was sighted and almost hit by a car in the vicinity of the sleepy town of Carmel, Ohio, in Highland County.
Mm-hmm.
The witness, a former Marine and his wife, had just moved to the area, and one evening they were driving home on the rural road in the wooded area from their home with a 7-foot-tall, extremely muscular, very bendable, like Gumby, tentacle-legged creature with a tubular body without any arms or head, ran in front of their car and into the woods on the other side of the road, narrowly avoiding being smacked by their Jeep in the process.
Mm.
So it would later be described as a dull gray, sickly gray in color with some sort of like walking squid is the best description they could get to. And its reports were featured in local papers and a lot of speculation of what it might be. One of the most popular theories, do you remember this? This is like season one stuff.
Yeah, I remember the story, but not
do you remember
the
what
great
the,
details.
There was two DNR, like there's a DNR said it was two different things.
Oh gosh. No, I don't
7-foot tall, sickly gray, no head, no arms, tentacle legged thing that almost got smacked by their Jeep.
I don't remember what they said it was.
A Marine and his wife seen it. The first idea, and the most popular one, thanks to some of the DNR representatives, was a misidentified deer.
Of course.
They just happened to be witnessed in a strange bipedal pose running across the road.
You know, it's in very rare glimpses, you might catch that.
And they say it's because white-tailed deer are known to rear up on their hind legs for and maybe even take a few steps in this position.
Oh, yes.
And their white underbellies.
Yep. Makes sense.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Yeah, and another one of my other favorite ones, which is more likely than the deer running across the road standing up, because then that's just a not deer.
Right.
And they would describe this deer stood up and ran across the road.
Right, yeah.
You know, they...
Deer.
Yeah, gosh. The other one that they said was an ostrich.
Hmm. Interesting.
Because tall, thin legs.
Legs, yep.
But they have a bulkier body, but the long neck, so maybe an ostrich had gotten out from somewhere. They're incredibly fast. They're flighty. You know, it fits, it's not what they've seen in my opinion,
yeah.
But it fits better than a walking deer running across the road,
right.
Almost getting smacked by a Jeep. I believe they're going 45 miles an hour.
I could see the ostrich thing a little bit more, just catching the glimpse of
and
it.
And then the black body is kind of like,
could blend in,
blend into the dark.
Yeah.
So you're just seeing that white front. So it just looks like this big, tall, spindly thing.
And even, don't they have like little whites? Tips on some of their body, like on their
if
feathers.
If it's a male, yeah, they have white. Yeah, they have white edging.
Is he right? So they might.
The females have it too. It's just not as
prominent.
Yeah.
Even so, you might catch a little glimpse of them
at night.
In between.
An ostrich. I don't think it was an ostrich, but an ostrich would make more sense to me personally than a deer.
From the two options at hand, yeah, that's I would go with that one if that's all I had.
I mean, yeah, it's just odd.
It is the Mount Carmel.
It's an Ohio classic.
Yep.
There's not much to it.
Not at all.
I actually knew a girl. I worked with her for a short period of time that she lived in Mount Carmel, and she said she knew these people. She would never come on the show, though, to talk about it.
Hmm.
But she said other people had seen it in the area.
Yeah.
And that she thought it was an ostrich.
Huh.
Don't know why. She just, that was her opinion. I think several of the people around the community were like, it was an ostrich.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
I mean, it could have been.
It could have been.
It was very odd. The people, they drew it. Remember the depictions of it?
The black and white
like the floppy drawing. Part of the top of it. It was weird.
Yeah, it was a strange one. Because it was very similar to the Fresno.
Just big.
Just a lot bigger. And yeah.
So if anybody don't know, the Fresnos, we did Fresno like season one, too.
Yeah.
Actually, the same episode, the Mount Carmel and Fresnos was all the same one.
Probably, yeah.
They were described as walking squids.
Yeah.
Because they looked like they had tentacles. They looked like they had two legs, but they were looked like they were a mass of things wrapped together.
Right.
To make legs.
Like a ligakete squid.
Yeah. Ligakete worms. We said that, a bundle of ligakete worms in the episode.
Yeah.
But now I kind of wonder if they were gaseous or gas-filled beings.
From where?
From the upper atmosphere.
Uh-oh.
So yeah, this collection. Walking on this whole, all these stories, seem like they're walking on the tips of tentacles.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, so I'll just go with my thought first off. This is a type of atmospheric creatures, and they are lowering themselves down to touch the surface to feed. So they are using this, like they're hooking onto essentially like the bottom
mm-hmm.
and crawling along that, but they're still buoyant enough to float.
Right.
If you watch the Fresno video, they kind of look like that. Because people say they're walking, they look like they're ghost walking, but they look more physical than ghosts in a lot of videos.
Right, yeah.
And I wonder if these are just creatures that are feeding on roadkill, feeding on that kind of stuff. These are all seen by roads, and the amount of roadkill, they talk about that with Dogman and everything like that. There's stories of what's called the Vashtrinirada, which are basically piranhas in the shadows, these things that normally just eat the dead of the world.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And the cleaners. They do take live prey every once in a great while, but generally speaking, there's so much death that there's so many rooms, there's so much room for decomposers.
They're the lysosomes of the living world.
There you go. And I just wonder if, like the Japanese battlefield, why there was bunches of them.
Yeah.
It's because it was so horrendous for so long that they just started collecting.
What if, too, this is, to further expound on your idea or thoughts, what if these are the juveniles?
Yeah.
They're just, this is how they feed.
Yeah, they may naturally just come down and feed and stay in this area for a while.
And eating like roadkill and stuff is easy obtainable protein that's abundant that can help them.
That they don't have to fight for.
And they can get out of the food chain faster.
Yes. Yeah. They don't have to fight for. They don't have mess with other competition.
I think I'm becoming a biologist.
You are. Because we talked about that with the manta rays, because we have tracked, it seems like, that they start maybe on the West Coast, even down in South America, with much more aggressive behaviors, like the Chilean dog eaters.
Mm-hmm.
And then they move back to East. By the time they get East, they're much larger. And our theory is that they go back up, and then they start taking a much more, either a less predatory role or even a filter feeding role. And we've talked about with sauropods, the biggest animals to ever walk on Earth, the surface of Earth. They did something very similar where their juveniles would eat carrion, would eat any protein sources they could get.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like you just said, they wanted to get out of the food chain as fast as possible. They wanted to be too big to bother.
Right.
So protein is much easier to accomplish that with than ruminating vegetation. But when you get so large, there is a tipping point where you can't eat enough protein to do that kind of function.
Yes.
So if you look at the biggest organisms ever, the two types are the massive bulk feeding herbivores, which are normally seen on land. There's a couple examples in the water environment. Stellar sea cows are one that comes to mind, 40, 50 foot long behemoths, and filter feeders.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two biggest. Carnivores in the water seem to top out at like 60, 70 feet. Apex predators, and we're talking about the extremes of the extremes. Some people even put some of those at like 80 feet. But if you look at the ones that hit 90, 100, 110, 120 feet.
Right.
Almost double, double the length, probably 8 or 10 times the bulk.
Mm-hmm.
They're filter feeding. Or on land, they're massive bulk grazers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking sauropods reading, the whole herd of them are eating forest.
Right.
There are whole ecosystems.
Major. Yeah.
Our whole ecosystems built on the backs of how they felt, they're how they feed.
Right.
But their juveniles, and weren't like we have, fossils of footprints with them and stuff like that. Their babies didn't rejoin them until they're like 7 to 10 years old when they were already that big, they're big bulk feeders.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think you're right with even so these are the jellyfish, these massive, and we're talking,
yeah,
depending on where, which story you're talking about, 800, 900, you know, even 1,000, 2,000 feet long, you know, with the tentacles included.
Mm-hmm.
If these are, the juveniles are similar, even a smaller species, that they could be doing something similar where their offspring hang out lower, all the jellyfish-like UFOs we've been seeing recently and all that stuff. Yeah. And they're cold. They are cold. So they could be ectothermic, that they are just the same temperature roughly as their external environment. And that's why they, unlike the thermals and stuff, they just look like black blobs.
They blend in.
Because it's just, they don't produce body heat. It's just not a part of their physiology.
Not their anatomy,
And then they feed, like you're saying. They take advantage of all of the easy meals.
We need cleaners. So we talk about a lot, I mean, the earth and the natural ways in which all life interacts with each other. It's always going to be the same, I guess, in one way or another. So there's niches that are always going to need to be filled, no matter who's or what type of animals filling them. So like when the dinosaurs went extinct, you know, according to the theory, you know, the mammals filled in a lot of those niches. Well, what if maybe the major brontosaurus niche is filled by atmospheric creatures? Now that left a door open for them to fill a niche, and then they did. You know, maybe back when the world was, maybe these were running the world for a minute, atmospheric creatures.
How would you know? There's no fossils.
But when the world was on fire and the sky was on fire, they all could have died and got knocked down a bit, and that's when dinosaurs took over. And then now they're all gone, and then gave opportunities for these guys to come back in.
Rain of fire. In the movie.
Yeah.
Instead of dragons, it was atmospheric creatures.
Creatures.
Responsible for mass extinction events.
Well, then it's just that's just the beginning. Nope is the beginning of that movie.
There you go.
It's the origin story of Rain of Fire, the atmospheric edition. The prequel is Nope.
I wonder, because they're just, it'd be so little physical remains of these guys.
Oh, absolutely.
Ever.
Yes. But it's a huge niche.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's the biggest environment on the planet.
A huge biome, but then the niche is still like...
Yeah, massive.
Yeah.
I mean, there are hundreds of available, quote-unquote, available spots.
Something has to fill it.
And we talk about the giant amoeba-like creatures, the living clouds, essentially. I think they're a big part of the decomposers, too. Mm-hmm. Or they maybe were. I think there's not nearly as many of them, and that could be pollution, that could be...
I mean, I'm sure they have to play a role. You know, if something decomposes here on the ground... It's gonna break down into, you know, dust eventually, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where's that dust gonna go?
Detritus.
Huh?
Detritus.
What's that mean?
Remember, that's the stuff that's floating around that's organic particles.
Exactly. It's gonna go, and then, so who's gonna clean that up?
The herring and the whales.
Atmospheric creatures. I mean, what lands in the water, the whales, gets blown up into the sky, and the atmosphere is constantly floating around. That's food available. Something's got to fill that niche. Something's got to eat that food.
So let's go back to, that was my idea, is that these are...
Atmospheric.
Yeah, juvenile or young atmospheric creatures that are taking, you know, available resources. And I kind of wonder if that's been the thing with the battlefields for, I mean, since human history, we've been killing each other since Cain and Abel.
Gosh, they know.
I mean, round two, you know, and so...
Probably before that even.
What was your idea with the caves? Going to that.
Just that. I was just thinking, what if these are just already a ground living, ground dwelling? Remember, El Kuro was like the rug kind of thing, but.
Yeah, but big, soft body, aggressive predator.
Yeah, but I guess not so much predator, more scavenger.
Generally speaking, it would eat you if you let it.
Right, right, right.
If you walked into
a buzzard would.
Yeah, if you walked into its domain and you got close enough.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, even hyenas, right?
Sure, but I think more like buzzards, literally just scavengers, just cleaners.
That's how hyenas prefer to be.
Okay, gotcha.
Hyenas, in their perfect world, they will never hunt. They are carcass break. Their jaws are so strong.
Yeah.
They want to eat bone marrow. They want to eat the stuff that the other predators can't get to. They're capable hunters, but that's just not what they want to do.
No, that makes sense. That was just my thought. Maybe these are... the war ones, they just come from, they know
deep
all that's
in the caverns.
There, and they don't even care, at that point, they don't care about their, when there's that much food available, maybe they sacrifice a little bit of their shyness or their safety.
Yeah, yeah.
Staying, which
it's called a feeding frenzy.
Yeah, absolutely, yep.
So you see that with whale carcasses on the surface with sharks.
Yes.
is that we think that that's super important for great white sharks to breed, because now we know that the population of great white sharks in the world is much, much, much smaller than thought 3 or 4 decades ago.
Mm.
It's actually, I think, a fifth or a sixth as many actual great white sharks as we thought there were.
That's not good.
And it wasn't due to overhunting, just that they're highly, highly migratory.
Our estimates were off.
And they'll go into every ocean. Uh-huh. And one individual, the same individual in Africa, will be in Australia.
Yep. Which is crazy, but cool.
But whale carcasses, maybe there's important breeding grounds for them where they come in and they feed, because the females are so much larger than the males, mm-hmm. and reproduction is not a fun process for them, because it involves like biting to hold on.
Yeah.
And they're sharks. They're big sharks.
It's not a pleasurable bite.
No, it's not great. No. So they think that if the females are extremely overfilled with food, that this allows the smaller males an opportunity when they're acting sluggish to breed.
To get in there, yeah.
But it's also a meeting ground for, you know, sharks that aren't social. But you'll also see dozens of species of shark. There's videos of giant tigers feeding right next to great whites, feeding next to greater hammerheads, feeding, you know, next to all kinds of species.
Yeah.
Because they're nobody's fighting
each other.
Because there's just so much food.
Yeah, they don't need to.
Yeah, so they don't have to drive. They normally just scavenge on the edges of the cave entrances, and there you go with the Dover demon. One of these things, a hairy, look at the head of the Dover demon.
Yeah.
Very cephalopoid. And maybe the body and the fingers were always described weird, like they didn't have right joints.
Right, yeah, maybe it was like tentacly, more or less.
I mean, the people that seen it didn't get, besides the head, they didn't get a super good look at it.
Right, exactly.
So what if these are, like you're saying, these like entities designed for cave life, that they're not cephalopods, but there's that convergent evolution thing. You know, these body plants, soft bodies.
Filling a niche.
Squeezing in and out of caverns.
Yeah.
Think about people that get stuck in caves because our bones were hard, you know.
Gosh. So why do they do that?
It's just a human thing.
Hey, I'm going to crawl half a mile through a crack that I can't even wiggle around in. This is fun.
This is called the devil's death bone.
Yeah, that's literally my worst nightmare. I've got stuck.
I don't like going into the Ohio caverns.
And that's big.
It's not that. It's just because I know if a rock falls.
Yeah.
I'm going to be alive for a long time waiting to die.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's one scary way to look at it.
And it's not like if a rock falls and hits me, it's over.
I mean, I've got my head stuck in like our railing and our stairs at home, and I freaked out because I'm going to die and here I'm stuck.
Yeah, it's not the claustrophobia for me.
Yeah.
It's that you're going to sit in a cave in the pitch black for weeks waiting to starve to death.
Mine's the claustrophobia. I don't care. I'll sit in a cave in the dark and die. I don't care. As long as I can move. If I can move, I'm fine.
But it's pitch black. You're going to walk off a cliff. They did that for us in the...
Stay in my circle.
Tallahassee Caverns, wherever me and Emily went.
Yeah.
Where
they turned lights off?
At first, because there's like, this is where they first walked in. The first guys that walked in, it died.
Yeah.
Because there's like a 200-foot drop-off.
Right in the front.
But there's a rock ledge over there.
Gosh.
So they took a flare and threw it, and it landed on the rock ledge. It was like 10 feet down. So the guys are like, I'm just going to jump. And he fell like into this hole forever.
Gosh. That's crazy. Caves are fun, but... Can be scary and dangerous.
I don't like them.
I like them. I like the I like the ambient temperature.
So that is nice.
Oh gosh, it's so nice.
Because the Tallahassee has a fish farm in it, like right at the door. That's what it was when they discovered it. Nice. They put a trout farm in it.
Yeah.
But there's also the salamander cave in there.
Yeah.
Which is just full. Thousands.
That's in Tennessee, right?
Yeah. Right there in Townsend.
Townsend,
like
Tennessee.
In downtown Townsend.
I tell you what, this past like heat wave we went through. Oh, I was sitting for my mom and dad. They went on vacation, and they got, you know, the two dogs, so I'm letting them out. I went back inside. I went down their basement, and my mind about blew. I forgot how much cooler basements are. It was like a 20-degree immediate difference just walking down the stairs. I'm like, I'm living here now for the foreseeable future till this heat's gone, and I did.
Yeah, so, I mean, do you have any other ideas what these walking squids could be?
I mean, I think either those two are my only thoughts, atmospheric or underground, like weird thing, or just
Forest elementals?
Can always, well, I mean, those are always options, or just some weird creatures like Alkiro, something one-offs. Weird, one-offs.
Interdimensional.
Or just the cleaners of the world that you never get to see. There's those, that's how the world works. Mm-hmm. We just don't know how it works.
Yeah. I've seen that where it's like, what if these are the interdimensional like bacteria?
Right.
That just...
Interdimensional like, white blood cells?
Yeah, they're just clean. Yeah. That's what's, all they do is supposed to take care of the death and rot.
It's Mother Earth's cleaning system.
Mm-hmm. There's big amoebas.
Right, yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed this. This is an interesting one. I have been the great and powerful mystery.
I've been JClone143.
We'll catch you next week, guys.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Crypt of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on CryptidsOfTheCorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye!